Our sermon theme for this year, our series, I do a series every year of 7 or 8 sermons, about one a month, and our theme this year, of which this is the 4th installment, is stories that make no sense. And I know that seems like a weird sort of theme for a running series of spiritual reflections, but it is not the only weird thing about this beloved community. It's actually been kind of fun, this weird sermon series. Age after age, in most of the world's great religious traditions, concepts and ideas that really matter have been approached through stories and lessons that seek to honor their complexity rather than reduce them to black and white talking points fit for the evening news. As long as there have been people of genuine faith, there have been those who are willing to paint no other picture of the world than one in which the colors overlap and blend and create something new instead of something we've seen 1,000 times before. From the parables of Jesus to the midrash of great rabbis to today's theme, the koans of the Zen masters of Buddhism, some have taught and some still teach that it is possible to transmit wisdom without oversimplifying it, that it is possible to challenge without generalizing, that it is possible to transform without moralizing away the gritty, complex nature of reality itself. So often, we want morality to be simple. We want stories to make sense. We want the truth to be clear. But it isn't, or at least isn't always. And it is in the middle, between our certainties, that the brave ones dare to tread. Certainly, we are accustomed to wanting the good guys and the bad guys to be clearly demarcated, to hope that the way forward might be articulated in glowing prose by some great leader who's got it all figured out. I want that. Lord knows, I wish one of you could stand up here and clearly articulate the way forward for all of us, because it would save me a lot of work writing these sermons. But even if you had the answers, they wouldn't be complete. And even if I, or any one of us, was such a leader as a person who would stand up and dare to proclaim such things, the second I proclaimed myself in possession of the truth, I would jump the shark and directly head toward the precipitous death spiral of a huckster and a cheat. The wise ones have always known what my colleague Wayne Arneson pointed out when he said, "Take courage, friends. The way is often hard, the path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone. The way is often hard. The path forward, when we look at it honestly and with clear eyes, is not usually obvious in the least. And yet, we do travel this confusing way together. We do seek out one another and wrestle truth from the mystery, even so." In that spirit, we turn again to the wise ones, the teachers of the many overlapping schools of Zen Buddhism, who brought us the mystery and beauty and confusion of the koan. A koan is a story, a question, a statement that is not readily accessible through rational thought, but can only be fully known and understood through intuition, through living with the question for as long as it takes until something about it becomes clear. Zen practice often then calls its practitioners to live with the clarity just long enough that it turns into uncertainty all over again. It's not a riddle or a puzzle. It's a form of truth that isn't unfolded without long and careful experience and meditation. You don't solve a koan. You live with one. What is the sound of one hand clapping? Well, you might say, the sound of two hands clapping is the result of two forces coming together, right? Two forces reacting to one another, force meeting force, responding and moving apart. It makes sense. But one hand, however, has no counterpart. No equal and opposite force to react against, nothing to bounce off of. One hand doesn't react at all. It doesn't meet another. If it never meets or touches anything, one hand doesn't have to strive or hit or seek or work or do. It just is. And what is the sound of something that just is? If you could commit to a true Zen practice, you might focus on just that. Find an answer and deconstruct it. Uncover a truth and turn it upside down. When you think you've got it figured out, you might remember that it was never about figuring in the first place. Think it through and then remember that thinking is itself a failure. You see how this might go on for a while. And every time the student of Zen approaches the question, no matter how many times they have approached it before, they must strive to meet it with what Suzuki, that Zen teacher who did our reading today, refers to as beginner's mind. In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few. In the words of one of his students, Richard Baker, the mind of the beginner is empty, free of the habits of the expert, ready to accept, to doubt, and open to all possibilities. It's the kind of mind that can see things as they are. This is the mind of the Zen practitioner, and this is the mindset that's required for honest contemplation of either a koan or the mystery of life itself. The spiritual practice of asking day after day, year after year, a question as seemingly simple as, what is the sound of one hand clapping? Is the act of continually beginning again, because it is there at the beginning that all new thought, all fresh identities are born. I once heard the actress Martha Plimpton say that her goal in life, her singular goal, was to do one thing that terrified her every single year. To dare to think a new thought, to learn a new thing, might be the only way we are ever really born again. And the great teachers of the Koan tradition invite us to be born over and over again every time we meet a question or the world or our sorrow with eager and unknowing eyes. To take our certainty, which is comfortable, and trade it for the unknown, the new beginning, which can be, quite often is, terrifying. That's the challenge of the teachers. It probably could go without saying that this idea of consciously choosing the mind of a beginner is contrary to a lot of the trajectory of modern life, right? We are educated, we are trained or acculturated to become not students, but experts. All of us are on our way to being experts at something in the fields of study that encompass our lives. Where the town doctor used to be the most general of general practitioners, now the fields of study blossom out like a family tree, every branch more refined and every one more specific. We surround ourselves with our apportioned tasks, sometimes wrapping ourselves up so tightly in the identity those tasks bring with them that we're almost inextricably connected to whatever it is we do all the time. To mothering, to sorting the mail, to bandaging the wounds or treating the sorrows or cleaning the gutters or herding the cats. And seldom, as a rule, do we burst out of those long-held familiar roles in which we have fought hard to become experts and dare to learn something entirely new or be something entirely new or go somewhere entirely unknown among people we do not know and see where the flow of a new day might take us. In this economy, in this changing time, in this time of war. Sometimes we are forced against our will to create new beginnings. Some of us are made weary beyond words by this effort. Some of us plainly resent it. And some of us in the end find a way to be grateful for change we never, ever would have chosen. I know at least one of us who's starting a new job tomorrow, eager, not knowing what happens next, but ready to show up at 7:30 a.m. and find out. I spoke to a family this week whose son had died, a pain no one should ever feel. And his father said to me, "You know, when a seed is planted in the ground, it doesn't get to choose whether it sprouts or not. It doesn't get to decide if there's a new beginning. It just is." And their life as a family has a new beginning that they never would have chosen, but must live into. For it is in the nature of a seed to grow all over again. Even with all of our emphasis on being experts, on creating identities in which we can be comfortable, on trying to understand the world and all that might happen in it, even in the presence of that, there are people who allow new beginnings to take root. And there are even those who actually choose new beginnings before the new beginnings choose them. There are people who welcome the chance to be students again, and who willingly walk away from what they have known, not because they have to, but because they want to. My illustration is not so deep as it should be, but bear with me. There is a band, or they would call themselves a musical project, which is called LCD Sound System. And this band is actually quite successful by the standards of alt-rock electronic music, which has different standards than other things. They've put out 3 critically acclaimed albums, one of which sold enough to hit the Billboard Top 10 last year. Now, I am not personally a hipster, but I am related to hipsters, so I can tell you that the hipster music scene is notoriously fickle. And anytime a successful band like LCD Sound System hits the top 10, somebody is bound to start shouting, "Sell out!" from the cheap seats. But this band has a rare combination of modest commercial success and actual respect from other musicians. They are as close to the top of their game as alt-rock electronic musicians are liable to get. And their frontman, James Murphy, recently announced that they're done. In a statement he released on the band's website not long ago, he said that their show on April 12th at Madison Square Garden will be it. He wrote, "We're retiring, getting out, moving on, but for one more night, we'll be playing with friends and family for 3 hours, stuff we've never played before. If it's a funeral, let's have the best funeral ever." He then went on the Colbert Report, told Stephen Colbert that he had had a life before being a rock star, and there are a lot of things he wanted to do after being a rock star. For instance, he said, "I really like making coffee." Star's like, "We'll recruit him for the kitchen crew." It is as if Bob Dylan really stopped making music after Blood on the Tracks and the infamous Dylan Christmas CD never happened. It is as if Lynyrd Skynyrd did a farewell show and refused to play Freebird. One last night, playing 3 hours of songs they've never played before, doing something new, not because they have to, but because they can, because being a rock star isn't the whole of these people's identity, and well, you know, there might be other things in this world after all, like making coffee, or learning something new, or trying all over again, or failing, but doing it with the foolishness and possibility of a beginner rather than the expectation and obligation of an expert. An expert, after all, has got to play the old standbys. A beginner can play anything her little heart desires, and there is beauty in that, and creativity, and spiritual gifts. There is a place for experts among us. Sometimes the world needs people who know what they're talking about. But there are other aspects of the expert mind that must be challenged if we are to move forward at all, personally, spiritually, and even professionally. After all, are we servants of everything that already is, or are we shapers of what might yet be? Is it our mission to fill out our days, fulfilling the expectations of those who currently hold sway? Or is it our mission to shape the world into something closer to what we dream it could be? Beginners don't have to play the old standards. They don't have to think inside the box or fulfill ancient patterns or culturally bound expectations. They don't have to do what people consider excellent and avoid what folks think is sort of shabby. Beginners only have new songs, and only new songs point the way toward what's to come. I remember what it felt like when I was a beginner in a congregation not so different from this one. I was a teenager, and I was all full of fear that there would never be a religious home for me. I was worried that I'd be rejected or cast out or just not fit in, and I was yearning, yes, yearning for a community and a religious tradition just like the one we have here. And I made my way by some means to this little church on a quiet street, Northern Hills Fellowship in Cincinnati, Ohio, and Dottie Tabor greeted me at the door. I still know her name. I didn't know what to expect or what to complain about or what was normal behavior among these strange new creatures who called themselves Unitarian Universalists. I just knew that on that first Sunday, somebody invited me to the weekly post-worship philosophical discussion at the Red Lobster. And I went. And the people were good to me. And they were cheesy little biscuits. And as the weeks went on, I knew that every Sunday when I left that place, I felt like I was walking on air. I could look back now with the eyes of the expert gleaned from the years and think of all sorts of things that weren't right or weren't perfect or were downright obnoxious about that marvelous little church that took me in and gave me a home. I'm sure that if I went back there now, it would be really hard to take off the lenses I now wear. Critical, informed, thoughtful, expert. And to see it once again how I did then. Just beautiful and welcoming and there for me when I needed it most. What would it be like for all of us to see this place, or our homes, our workplaces, our lives, our local grocery store, with a beginner's mind, all wrapped up in both terrifying newness and open to whatever comes our way? What would it be like for us right here to see one another with beginner's eyes again and to challenge all of the boxes and categories and molds into which we have put one another or have chosen to put ourselves? What if I could walk into this place not as your minister, but as this lonely soul in need of community and allow a place like this to save me all over again? This Sunday, right now, a new beginning might be happening. This moment, somebody, maybe you, is discovering a new possibility, and this very hour, somebody might leave this sanctuary feeling like they're walking on air. What is the sound of one hand clapping? Darned if I know. The question confounds me, leaves me stupefied, not quite sure, a little uncertain of the way forward. It makes a fool of me. It wipes away my expert knowledge and replaces it with mute wonder. And that, friends, is a great part of the whole point. For a while, you will keep your beginner's mind. But if you continue to practice, although you may improve some, you are liable to lose the limitless meaning of the original mind. If your mind is empty, it is always ready for anything. It is open to everything. In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few.